about STDs, but indirectly about cervical cancer. I'll be talking a lot about Gardasil, although in February, GlaxoSmithKline will come up with their vaccine as well. But we're talking about not the initiative that was really put forward by Merck when Gardasil was FDA approved, that initiative being primarily to vaccinate girls at the middle school level. The CDC panel that served as the advisory committee relative to that vaccine does indeed suggest that middle school vaccination is warranted and a good idea. But the catch-up vaccination plan provided by that panel suggests that girls 13 to 26 also be vaccinated as soon as possible. Again, these are vaccines from both companies that cover types 16 and 18, both of those together being responsible for about two-thirds of the cervical cancer burden, at least in the United States. So, just like to acknowledge the study team here, and this is a small part of a much larger study. So you want to think about, if we take this initiative for the catch-up vaccination program recommended by CDC, how would we ever marshal the resources to do that nationwide? And if that's not possible, then where do we prioritize? One thing that would come to mind, for example, just intuitively, would be, would it be likely that women 13 to 26 who are diagnosed with an STD, let's say chlamydia, for example, would be more likely to have HPV and therefore should be prioritized for vaccination? The slides do move slowly. I presented earlier today. I think the system at APHA has been overloaded by the technology. So here we assess the prevalence of HPV, and we essentially looked at 18 different types. Now, some of those types are low-risk types, but we did include in those 18 types, types 16 and 18, which are the high-risk types, as well as some other high-risk types, like 31 and 34 and so on. This is a sample of African-American women 15 to 21 years of age recruited from the southern United States, where STDs tend to be far more common compared to other areas of the United States. So the first question addresses that intuitive point that I brought up a moment ago, the question being, would you find more HPV in women who are also diagnosed with an STD such as chlamydia, gonorrhea, etc.? We also just wanted to find out, what are the correlates of testing positive for HPV? Are there ways that we can identify women who are more likely than others to be HPV positive? So this was a study that used ACASI to collect self-reported data. ACASI tends to help with recall. It reduces bias and may promote more disclosure. The sample is comprised of almost 300 women, and this is just really a sample that's baseline data only. So, again, as I said, it's part of a larger study. And three clinics were involved. The essay I won't go into, but essentially, as I said earlier, this is 18 different types, and five are low risk. And we also collected urine for Trichomonas vaginalis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea. And there's just a quick slide showing some of the self-reported measures that we thought potentially would be related to HPV prevalence. So you can see penile vaginal sex and sex with males who are 5 years or more older, sex with male partners that the females would retrospectively label as casual, and use of birth control pills. So prevalence in this sample was 44.8%. Again, that's testing for 18 different types of HPV. Keep in mind, that's a point prevalence. HPV typically clears the body within about 10 months. So this is just at one point in time, nearly half the sample testing positive. It wouldn't be unlikely if we could do that again in, let's say, 2 years, that we might have the same estimate comprised almost entirely of different women in the same sample. So, and again, you can see prevalence of the other STDs, 14.1 for chlamydia, 16.5 for trich, and really very high for gonorrhea, given that gonorrhea's pretty much been going by the wayside lately, nearly 5%. This is clearly a product of the sample. African-American women in the United States tend to experience a disproportionate burden of STDs, not to mention HIV. So, interesting to think, and kind of raises a question at first. They were more likely to be younger, so age was related to prevalence. But when you start to drop back and think about just some basic physiology here, that begins to make sense. It's quite likely that the older women in the sample had previously been exposed to several of the more common varieties of HPV and developed immunity. And this assay is not picking up antibodies. It's picking up the virus itself. So age does make a difference. So the question becomes, what else from that list on the slide I showed maybe 6 slides back also mattered? So as you're sitting there thinking about your own hunches and hypotheses, let me advance the slide and tell you basically nothing else mattered. I thought surely it'll matter whether or not women who have other STDs also have HPV, thinking the direction of the association would be that STDs, such as chlamydia, would suggest a greater likelihood, maybe a modest odds ratio, but certainly significant, of testing positive for HPV. The answer was no. But there are some trends to report. So we have a trend, 0.10, regarding number of lifetime male sex partners. And we explored that in some more detail, and you can see the adjusted odds ratio at the bottom, which became non-significant after controlling for age. So we're back to age again. And there we do have the birth control pills. I don't get real excited about the 0.043, but certainly with a sample of only 300 women, you can make the case that, that's right in there. That's something we can look at. But again, age adjusted, and you can see it remains significant, but that confidence interval is awfully close to 1 on the bottom end to suit my taste. And again, frequency of sex, and it becomes non-significant. And no other differences. So what does all this mean? Well, I think the evidence here suggests that the epidemiology of HPV prevalence is not comparable to the epidemiology of the other three, that these STDs, in essence, don't run together. We know, for example, that many of the STDs do run together, but in this case, at least with this population, that may not be true. condoms to make a big difference. HPV, because it's a virus capable of spread through skin-to-skin contact. It's so easy during foreplay, even if a condom is used from start to finish of penetrative sex, for that virus to make the jump from one person to the other, that we really wouldn't be surprised by that finding. So, I think we come back to this. The prevalence of 44%+. So, vaccination of young African-American women, these were all women recruited from public clinics, regardless of risk indicators, may be the most efficacious public health strategy regarding this catch-up effort. I do think it's very important for us to consider the cost of this vaccine. The cost to the provider is $360. So with a modest markup at the clinic, we're looking at $400. The question you have to think about here is whether or not we're looking at a potential health disparity in the making. This may be one of those prevention products that you have to have some extra money around to afford. So the issue of a disparity is something to consider. And with that, I'll end, and hopefully I finish with it on time alive. Studies like this one. This is a convenient sample. It's a small sample. It's not representative. What we wind up with is evidence that suggests we need to keep on looking here and keep asking these questions with larger and more representative samples. But we're certainly not ready to make any large-scale recommendations. Yes. Understanding, and I think this is very difficult for anyone to keep up with because it's changing so quickly, is that more and more the insurance benefits are picking up part or all of the vaccine. But we always are reminded, working in public health, in fact, it increased recently from 45 to 47, 47 million Americans simply don't have health insurance in any form. And so when we start thinking about prioritizing public resources, we may want to think about beginning with those who have no insurance at all. But I editorialize. Do we have time for one more? Sure. Yes. Yeah, actually there was a nice paper published in, I think it was February of this year in JAMA, using data from NHANES, I believe, that reported nationally representative estimates for prevalence of HPV. And 44 point something percent, ironically, was the average, but I don't remember for what age group. I think it was slightly younger age group. So to put it into perspective, it seems to fit the national norm.